Good evening, and welcome once again to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. I'm your host, Jeff Hayden, and joining me as tonight's co-host, by now well known as a frequent co-host on Your Legal Rights, retired San Francisco attorney David Begelizen.
Jeffrey, about 4 years ago, on this station, we took a look at managing and planning for the small estate. Tonight, we take a much broader look. Here are some questions that we'll be thinking about. How does probate work? What is probate? When do you want to avoid probate? If so, how do you avoid probate?
What is all this about probate? And when do you want to bring in a lawyer? And how do I find the right lawyer?
What are some of the top myths and misunderstandings and mistakes about estate planning and probate?
As always, we're eager to hear what's on your mind and answer your questions. Give us a call at 415-841-4134. Again, 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. It's you we want to hear from. You're our most important guest. Call us at 866-798-8255. But do remember that our guests join us. They're happy to help you out. They're here to educate and inform and perhaps entertain. They can't give you specific legal advice about a case they haven't seen. But again, they're here. They're happy to help. The views they offer may not be the same views as their clients or their employers, but they're here to help you out, so give us a call. David, why don't you tell us who's joining us tonight?
Oh, we're very, very fortunate this evening to have John O'Grady to help us sort out the issues involved in planning your estate. Mr. O'Grady is one of the leaders in estate planning in our community. He has a full-service estate planning law firm in San Francisco. Mr. O'Grady served as the 2012 chairman of the Estate Planning Trust and Probate Section of the Bar Association of San Francisco. John received the Bar Association of San Francisco Crystal Award for outstanding services to diversity education programs in 2020 for his mentoring of new lawyers. Drawing on case studies from his extensive experience, that's more than 30 years, working with families, John O'Grady will demonstrate how to develop a personalized plan tailored to your specific goals and needs.
Without further ado, John O'Grady, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you, Jeff. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, before we go further, I'd like to start with this. You've been known to say that estate planning and probate is not really about the property. No, it's about people. Can you explain?
Well, first of all, many people don't know what estate planning means or refers to. So let me say that it's estate is an old word for our assets, our stuff, our property, our investments. So it's estate planning is long-term planning for what's going to happen to our assets. And most people think of estate planning in terms of a will. And who's going to get my property when I die? But I find that that's really not the primary concern for most people. For most people, the primary concern is who's going to manage my investments and pay my bills while I'm still alive, but I can't manage my assets myself. So if I have a stroke or if I got long-term dementia, who's going to take care of me and my assets and protect my long-term quality of life. So in that sense, estate planning is really about the person rather than the stuff or the property. The other angle is, who do I trust with all this? And who's going to get my property when I die? Is secondary and important. That's a big picture answer.
John, does this also include providing some comfort not only to the people who are planning and using your services, but also the people to whom they're going to be leaving their property, as well as the instructions that go along with their wishes?
Yes. A big part of that question is, how do I communicate with my loved ones about what I'm doing? Like, do I include the kids in the conversation or not? And do I give them copies of the documents or not? There's pros and cons about all this communication in the process, because if you communicate, you set everyone's expectations. The downside is that it makes it hard to change your plan later on. And a big part of it is, how are they going to find what they need to find when the inevitable crisis comes?
All right.
So let me ask you, are you taking charge of your legacy, or will the government make these decisions for you? Isn't that really what it comes down to?
That's exactly it. You got it, Jeff. That's right. That's what I always say. So, believe it or not, we all have a will. Most of us don't think we have a will, but the California Probate Code is our will, unless we have taken charge by signing a will of our own to change what the probate code has specified for us.
John, let's go into some particulars. Let's orient our home audience. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions all at one time. What is probate? What is a trust? How is the probate managed? Why does one want to have a trust?
Probate is the court department that loved ones go through when their departed loved one has died with the right kind of assets that need to go through probate. That means assets that don't go through a trust or a beneficiary designation, for example, on a retirement account. So normally it's real estate investment accounts go through the probate process.
So does this mean the judge is supervising it?
Yes.
And is it a public record?
It's mostly public, yes.
And is it easy to do, or is it cumbersome?
It's tedious and cumbersome.
And time-consuming?
Time-consuming. It usually takes at least a year. Like in San Francisco, the judges have a caseload of more than 1,000 cases. And so the courts are backed up. And there's a lot of procedural hurdles. It all takes time.
So is there a way to avoid all that? And does having a trust or a will best avoid that?
Yes. Assets that are in a trust don't go through probate. So almost everyone with real estate in the Bay Area has it in a trust.
Let me take this call from Raphael on line one. Raphael, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you. Thanks for taking the call. So I have a comment and a question on this topic. I'm in the real estate business, and I do a lot of transactions. I am finding, and this is all a melting pot. You have a lot of friends and clients that are from different parts of Asia, China, et cetera. And I am finding that they are not putting their properties in trusts if they're nationals from there, but they're permanent. And I wish somebody could speak to that and say, you know, you're getting a lot of trouble for yourself by not in a trust and just have stop. And I try to hit that. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not.
Raphael, I don't mean to cut you off, but your connection is pretty wonky.
Hold on. Is that any better?
Much better. Why don't we take it from the top?
Okay. So I'm in the real estate business. I'm not an attorney, but I do a lot of transactions. And a lot of my clients, because we're in a melting pot in the Bay Area, are Asian and Indian, et cetera. And I'm finding that people of different Asian ethnicities are not as often holding their properties in a trust, and I try to hint at it to them as strongly as I can, but not being an attorney, I'm just, you know, I really wish there was more outreach within
that community or those communities, Chinese and Indian and whatnot, that are property owners here and living here, that they would be saving themselves a lot of trouble down the line, or their families, if they would put their hold their properties in a trust. And I keep telling them that, and I feel like I'm banging my head against the wall. So if you could speak to that and just please, you know, tell them, hey, call me for free consultation or whatever it is that you do as to why you need to be in a trust, that would be really helpful to those communities. I appreciate it.
Were you able to track all that?
Yes, yes. Well, about headbanging, almost everybody knows they're going to die. But doing a will and a trust, you know, even for people who know better, but doing the will and trust means facing every conflict known to the individual, every conflict known to the family. And everybody I talk to is going to do their trust next month. It's firmly planted at the bottom of everyone's to-do list, no matter what part of the world they're from. So that's part of the context. And I found that the best way to talk to someone about getting their will and trust done is to go through the process yourself, get your own act together, and then you have some credibility. You could talk about how difficult it was as you go through the process, and then talk about how good it feels to have your affairs in order. And that's way more effective than nagging. In terms of outreach, outreach is problematic because there's just not enough of us estate lawyers around, and we're in big demand. Many young lawyers, they go after the big dollars in high tech or somewhere, but estate planning's not very sexy. So there's just not enough of us experienced estate lawyers around. There's a lot of cheap alternatives that people fall prey to, but... Yeah.
John, I'm glad you brought up the issue of the cheap alternatives. I could tell you a story about my in-laws, but I'm sure you could share some other ones. Sometimes people will go to what I'll refer to as a trust mill, and they charge something like $600 or $700 or $800. How does that service work, and how does that stack up compared with what you think ought properly to be done?
Well, at a trust mill, everybody gets the same trust, the same documents, and the vendor is like a secretary. You might as well do it online yourself, and you just fill in the blanks. And what people really need is a lawyer who can challenge them to make good decisions and properly document their decisions.
Can you give the home audience an example of the sorts of things that don't go quite right when people buy this product from the trust mills?
Oh, yeah, there's many examples. There's a do-it-yourself trust that somebody did. She left everything to her sister, and then her sister predeceased her, and there's nobody else named, and so there was a big fight, a family fight that went all the way up to the Florida Supreme Court. There's a lot of similar cases in California.
So what would the alternative to that be if someone were to try to make a plan that would cover such a thing and be thorough?
Well, we always kind of play the whole scenario out. You want to leave your assets to X. What happens if X predeceases you? And then you say Y. What happens if Y also predeceases you? And to eliminate the uncertainty. So mainly the lawyer's job is to make your intentions clear and unambiguous so there's no confusion no matter what happens. So we cover all the possibilities, all the scenarios, the cheap trusts just don't get that. I mean, and there's many versions of the cheap trust. Going to a trust mill is one, where you pay several hundred dollars, or do it yourself is one, or, you know, well, the most popular cheap trust is actually the old trust, because it's because this work is the work of a lifetime. I mean, our relationships are always changing. We're always changing. The law's always changing. The best practices are always evolving. And so people call me up. They want to know about how much does a trust cost, but really, if they're smart, they're not looking for a trust. They're looking for a long-term relationship with a reputable, experienced estate planning lawyer. So that they can call every few years and talk about whether or not to update the documents.
So
let me ask you, John, how can I protect my property rights and plan for my care and long-term financial security without giving up control of my affairs? I don't have offspring and a spouse and people that are around necessarily to take care of it. So it seems to me that if I become disabled, I'm going to have to balance between giving up a certain vestige of control and at the same time have somebody there that can do something. I mean, how do I deal with that?
Well, that gets to the most neglected question in my field, which is, who do you trust? In a trust, the trustee is the trusted one. And for assets outside the trust, we use a power of attorney document to name a trusted one to manage retirement accounts and other assets outside the trust. But the trusted one could be, I call the trusted one Aunt Jane. The hypothetical trusted one has business experience, values and follows professional advice, has the respect of whoever you're leaving the property to, nieces and nephews or whoever it is, and Aunt Jane is retired, so she has the time, and she can drop everything and take on the huge task of managing your entire financial life without notice.
Not everybody has Aunt Jane.
That's right. Most people don't, actually. Most people do have some friends. But what I find is that when friends say yes right now, and then they're called in to serve several years later, they end up saying no because the friendship has changed and it's too much to ask of a friend in most cases.
Friends don't let friends drink bud. Does each spouse need a separate lawyer due to conflicts of interest?
Well, the first question is we can only give away what we own. And so in California, we have community property law, which means that income earned during the marriage is community money and property brought into the marriage is separate property. So premarital property is separate. There are other forms of separate property. And sometimes we have a separate property trust for each spouse and a joint trust for the community property. And sometimes they get separate lawyers for that property agreement. We don't do the property agreements. But we do need to know who owns what before we can do anything. And normally, we do a joint trust, and we represent both spouses. So they don't need separate lawyers for that, Jeff.
When do we, as a layperson coming to you, know whether we need separate lawyers or not? I mean, are there some red flags that would tell you we should go separately or maybe that we should be alerted to?
No. Call me and we'll talk about it.
Good. So now a much larger, more expansive question. How can people best provide for loved ones and favorite causes? How does that conversation go? Can you give us some examples of how you guide people in thinking that through?
Well, that brings up, you know, with the children, the question of, do you treat them equally or equitably?
What does that mean?
In lay terms.
Well, most people want to, well, let me answer it this way. Well, equally is pretty clear. You divide the assets up equally between the kids when you die. Equitably is something different. Equitably would say the one who's making $1 million a year as an investment banker gets nothing because he doesn't need the money. And the one who's doing great work in public radio, not making much money, gets more. That would be equitably.
I see we have John on line one. John from Sebastopol, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, good evening. I wondered if the speakers would address using a trust company to take care of one's estate. I'm in a situation you just mentioned, children, no trusted relatives. So we and other couples have named each other as executors, so on. But as time passes, and we've seen the enormity of taking care of our parents' estates, some of us, we've all kind of concluded that we'd rather just have professionals do it. Would you talk about trust companies a bit and the pros and cons, if you would, please?
Yes, by trust companies. Well, there are corporate trustees, which is one version of trust companies. Those usually the big banks have trust departments, but they usually require many millions of dollars of assets before they'll take that on. There are also, and they, for the right situation, they can be a good choice. The other alternative that comes to mind is professional fiduciaries. Those are individuals who are licensed to be trustees. And often we draft our documents so that certain people, like in your case, maybe your friends, could choose a professional trustee when the time comes, so that you don't have to, it's probably too early to start interviewing professional trustees or corporate trustees right now.
John, that brings to mind a family situation. I have a relative who has a daughter who is not good at taking care of affairs. She's not good at taking care of money, not good at judgment and things like that. And she's going to have people looking after her when her mother is no longer available. And also, there's a fair amount of money involved as well, and the daughter would be quite vulnerable. That, I think, needs some special attention. How do you guide people in situations like that?
Well, it's similar with, like, young adults. Like, at what age do they get the money without controls? Most people choose 25, but some people choose older ages. And the trustee has discretion to provide for their living expenses and their health and education maintenance. And so the trust can be open long-term to provide for an adult's care that way.
Would it also designate someone to manage the money and also see that the young adult is being cared for in the proper way? I mean, this is, I'm talking about not just about the money, but about the human part of it.
Well, the trustee only handles the money part. The care would require the cooperation of the adult, which you don't always get. Sometimes you need a conservatorship, which is like called a guardianship in some states, to get legal rights to provide for someone's care.
And is that something that's built into the work that you provide for people?
No. The conservatorships are very specialized, and they're kind of rarely needed in my work. So we don't do them, partly because the courts make it very hard for the lawyer to get paid.
Okay. And how do you communicate? How does the client communicate his or her intentions and document those intentions to prevent misunderstandings and conflicts?
And especially when you have a situation, and you've undoubtedly dealt with this before, when as a parent you're leaving things behind to siblings and you envision them doing certain things with certain treasured assets or the way they deal with one another, and you want to get them on the same page, and maybe they're not.
Well, and all hell breaks loose when the authority figure, you know, the parent dies or has a stroke, and the siblings have money to fight about. And so our work is to head that off at the pass as much as possible.
How do you do that?
Well, one thing is you choose your trusted one carefully. Is it going to be one of the kids or not? You know, often it's a bad idea to name one of the kids, although most parents want to name one of the kids and do. Parents underestimate the sibling rivalry after their death.
That's one of the things I've been thinking about, and that is sometimes when the parent dies, the children fight over things. We call that Mom Always Loved You Best. And are there ways to try to avoid that?
Well, I like to say that it's not about who inherits the dining room table. It's about the childhood issues underneath the table that are just beginning to see the light of day. And so to head all that off at the pass, you can start when you're young, training the kids about money. There's many strategies to use from an early age. Like, you give each child $100 that they're going to give to a charity, and then they research the charities and visit the charities. And you give all the kids, you know, $500 together, and they make a joint decision about money. That's kind of one strategy to prepare the heirs, we say. But it's also about documenting everything so that the documents are really clear about who gets what. One of the big areas of conflict is when they inherit a building together or a business, and all of a sudden they're business partners, and things go crazy in a hurry.
Or the obvious example, what if the family home is the issue, and you have, you know, a parental desire to go in one direction, or maybe somebody wants to live in the home and somebody else wants to sell it because they've moved their life to some other part of the country. How do you resolve that stuff?
Well, it's inevitable that one child wants to put a new roof on the building and the other one wants to sell it. So all that's very predictable. One way to do it is to give the house to one child and buy life insurance for the other, so that that one child can live in the house and the other one gets cash so they can be free to buy their own house.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 San Francisco, and we'll be back right after this.
You're listening to Your Legal Rights. Support for KALW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you live in San Francisco or Marin County, the Bar Association's lawyer referral service can arrange for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. Call 415-989-1616 or visit sfbar.org for more information. And now we return to Your Legal Rights with your host, Jeff Hayden.
So tonight we're talking about probate, your will, what keeps you out of probate court, how do you manage all this? A couple of years ago, we took a look at managing or planning your estate. Tonight, we're happy to go back and resume that discussion. If you have questions for my guest, our phone number is 415-841-4134. Again, that's 415-841-4134. If you're outside of the San Francisco Bay Area, call us toll-free at 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-8255. And as always, you can call regarding any question on tonight's topic. We're talking about estate planning or probate or taking care of your long-term needs. If you're not able to do them at some point, the point I'm making is that you don't have to jump in the exact spot we may be in our conversation. We're here to help. Call us 866-798-8255. One of the myths I've heard about is from folks that think that if they have a will that's good enough, their family does not have to go through the probate process. Are they right?
They're totally wrong. Well, if all they have is a will and not a trust, it goes through probate. And most people, they do a will and they think they're done and they don't ever have to think about a will again. And so chances are that's a very old will and they can't even find it, don't even remember what it says.
John, I'm thinking about some shortcuts that people sometimes take, such as, for example, if they want to have the children inherit the house, then to put the children's name on the house, or some such thing as that. How do those things work? Do they work well, or do they create obstacles?
Well, those shortcuts, you know, and the cheap trusts we talked about earlier, they are the source of most of our revenue because they create big disasters that require a lot more legal fees in the long run. So, better to pay now, pay and get it done right the first time. So what goes wrong, for example, is that if the parent puts the child's name on it now, there's no a step up in basis for income tax purposes when the parent dies for the portion given to the child, and other complications like the requirement of filing of gift tax return, which won't really affect most people because you have to have several million dollars or more.
I'm thinking about another example, and that is, what if the child runs into financial trouble, such as, for example, running up a great big income tax bill and owes the Internal Revenue Service a lot of money? How does that affect things?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of examples of that where the parent gives the house to the child or a portion of the house to the child, and then the child loses it in a divorce or bankruptcy or to a tax debt or somehow. In some cases, you know, the parents have trusted the child with all their assets, just gifted, put everything, the child's name on everything, and the child kind of runs off with the money and disappears, and then ends up in prison.
I represented that case many years ago. Let me take a call from Wesley in Richmond. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I was calling about a very similar.
Could you please thing
that you
turn off
about?
Your radio? Oh, we're getting a lot of feedback.
My fault. Is that better?
Much better.
Thank you. My question was, if a child is put on a trust and then they were to be like sued or something, are those assets like in jeopardy in any way before the parent dies, or are they not?
So if the parent signs a trust leaving assets to the child upon the parent's death, and the parent's still alive and the child gets sued,
mm-hmm.
Is the child's inheritance at risk?
Exactly. Or yeah, are those assets? Yeah. Exactly.
Okay, that's the question. The answer is no. Those assets are not at risk because those assets don't belong to the child yet. The child doesn't have any right to those assets. The parents are still alive. The parents can amend the trust and take the child out, and if the parent wants to. So the parent, the quick answer is no.
Can I jump in and give a follow up to Wesley's question? You have a child at home who may be a little more reckless with their money or their business, and you want to see to it that when you're not there to protect them, there's still a nest egg for them. What can you do in the way of a trust so that their creditors can't get to the assets?
That's a topic for another lawyer another evening.
That's fair enough. Sometimes I go outside the wheelhouse, and I didn't mean to put you in that spot. I remember I'm going back to my law school days, and we were a lot younger back then when they talked about a spendthrift trust, and I don't know if California has those vehicles or not.
It's we do. There are some things we can do. It's a little more technical that I want to get into at the moment.
Understood. Well, more importantly, Wesley, did we get your question answered?
Yes, very much so. Thank you for your answer.
Thank you for joining us. Come back anytime. Okay. Let me turn it to Huerta from Castro Valley.
Okay. Hello.
Hi, welcome. You're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, perfect. I just want to know if I can get some technical information from you guys. I need to make a legal living trust document, so I'd like to know if I can get a phone number so I can discuss all my information privately with you guys.
Are you asking to be able to reach Mr. O'Grady in his practice?
That is correct.
My telephone number is 415-986-8500.
Okay.
And we'd be happy to hear from you. 415-986-8500.
So I will call you tomorrow then, and we can go from there. But I would definitely like to hire you guys to get the living trust document going right now.
Well,
okay.
Good. We'll talk. Yes.
Well, thank you for your help.
John, will the transfer of wealth to children or other heirs help to foster dependence or independence as they continue on when the parents are gone?
Can I add a wrinkle to that? I had a friend who, growing up, was told, when we're gone, you're not inheriting a dime. And the theory of the parents wasn't necessarily that they were going to follow through on that. The idea was to teach somebody to be strong and take care of themselves and not to sit back with the expectation they're going to inherit the family home, whatever estate there was, and really make them independent. That brings up David's question. Do you think that knowing that you're going to get this makes you dependent or independent?
Yes, and my clients, we struggle with that question a lot. And my version of the question is, how do you leave money to your children or to your whoever in a way that's going to expand their lives rather than destroy it? You know, there's no easy answer. And I've seen a lot of times where too much money destroys people. One young man had received all these gifts of real estate partnership interests from his father. He couldn't hold down a job. He had no incentive to work. And he wanted to hire me to give all this stuff back, all these gifts back to his father, because the gifts came with too much manipulation.
And it's not always that way. I do have a friend, maybe listening tonight, who is the son of a fairly large manufacturer. And it's rare to meet somebody so fiercely independent and who really eschews any showing that he was there to inherit. Let me turn it to Anne from San Francisco. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi, thanks for the show. I missed the first half hour, so I don't know if this question has already been answered. But
we're happy to answer for you nonetheless.
It shouldn't be that hard. We already have a trust. We're married. We have a house. We have cars. We don't have any children, but we have cats. So we thought it was important to have a trust. And my parents had one, and it really, really helped when they passed. And we have, picked our executor and who's going to get what and all that. And I cannot remember how can we get copies to our executor, and do the other people need to have copies? Can it be through email, or does it have to be notarized, or I forget how we do it.
So I think your question is, do your documents get notarized?
They already have been, yes.
Okay, they've been notarized. So you're really asking who gets copies?
Right.
You don't have to give copies to anyone. They don't get filed anywhere. But mainly your trusted people, like the trustee of your trust, whoever you've named as successor trustees, they need to know where to find everything they're going to need. They're going to need to find copies of all your documents. They're going to need to know which insurance companies to contact, where your bank accounts are, whether you have life insurance, where your retirement accounts are. They need to be able to find all this. And they need to know... they probably need to know some of your passwords. They need to be able to easily find everything they're going to need to take over.
Even though the house is in their, they're the trustee and it's all listed in the trust. I don't know about insurance and all that stuff. So
they're going to have to deal with all that. They're going to have to take over your entire financial life without notice. And so,
that's true.
So you want to make it easy for them by giving them clear instructions about how to find, where to look for everything they're going to need.
Okay.
There used to be an old school that you would just put everything in a letter, seal it in an envelope, and stick it in a place where they'll know to look.
I know. We've got it. We could tell them where it is. But, I had to go through that with my parents, too. My dad passed first, and then I went with my mom. And we had to go to every little bank account that he had, and insurance and veterans pension and all that kind of stuff. So, yep. All right. That's really a good point. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And do they need a copy of the trust, or can we just say it's over there in that bookshelf?
Tell them where exactly in the bookshelf to find it. They don't need a copy right now. You probably want to give it to... If you tell them, they're not going to remember, because it could be like 20 years from now.
Hopefully. And it'll probably change a little bit after that. And if we do a change, I have one more question. If we do a change, like an addendum, do we have to get that notarized?
Well,
like
don't,
if we get a new car.
Well, it depends upon the change. If you get a new car, you don't normally put cars in the trust.
We do.
But if you buy new real estate, you normally want to buy it as trustees of your trust.
Yes.
And you should be talking to your estate lawyer about all this every 3 or 4 years. Just have a conversation about whether it's time to make changes or not.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's a lot more complicated, you know, than just getting it done. So you got to keep on it.
It's a living, breathing thing.
Yes, it's a living trust.
the work of a lifetime, Anne.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate your help. It's always great. I love this show, and I'm sorry I missed the first half. But thank you.
And thank you for joining us. Come back anytime.
I do. Okay, bye.
Thank you. Let me take a call from Carla. Carla in Vallejo, you're on the air. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, thank you. I apologize. I have a cold. My voice is funny. But I wanted to ask if one partner is on Medicare, Medicaid, how can that influence how this all goes down if there is no trust?
I don't know anything about Medicaid. In California, we call it Medi-Cal.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Medi-Cal.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Medi-Cal is kind of government-provided health care for people who don't have assets. And I just don't know anything about it.
Okay. All right. Well, that was my question. I suppose it'd be not right to ask what the average price is for having a trust done.
Well, that's that's a very common question, and it's similar to how much does it cost to have a house built?
How much does a car cost?
Yeah, it's not a product; it's a service, and so we need to talk about the design before we can talk about price. But generally, it's several thousand dollars if you're going to go to a competent, experienced lawyer. And it's a lot more than a trust. It's several different documents, including will and power of attorney and assignment of assets to trust and healthcare directive, often a deed transferring your real estate to yourself as trustee of the trust, and sometimes it's there's a lot to it, and there's a lot of options for each document, and the process usually takes a few months. So it's a lot of work for you, and it's a lot of work for the lawyer if you're going to do it thoughtfully.
I see. Well, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah,
Carla, thank you for joining us in Your Legal Rights. Let me ask you one quick question. Are my children are also different? In order to be fair, do I need to put them all equally in charge of my affairs?
Putting them all in charge is a recipe for chaos. It should be one person. One trusted person is in charge, because there are many decisions, many conversations, many documents to sign, and if you have all the children sharing the job of trustee, it often doesn't go well, because they fight, they enact the sibling rivalry as they try to administer the trust. That's why Aunt Jane is the best choice for trustee, because she doesn't have a horse in the race, Jeff.
I don't have an Aunt Jane.
Well, you're stuck. You might want to go with a, you could have trusted loved one to choose a professional trustee, as we said earlier.
So one question that people have asked, if I just put my daughter on my bank accounts, maybe the title of my house, can I escape having to do an estate plan?
Daughter on your bank accounts.
Can't I just add her name to title on whatever I want to deal with?
There are some ways to do that. You could do pay on death accounts, like, for example, at the bank. They're a lot less flexible than a trust because, you know, like, what happens if your daughter dies before you? In limited circumstances, we kind of recommend that approach, actually. So not everyone needs a trust. And as long as you can count on yourself to update it in the event that your daughter tragically dies before you, that could work. Not so recommended if in the case of real estate, because there's too many unsettled questions about the law with real estate.
Let me turn it over to my favorite last-minute caller, Peter from Florida. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, I am your favorite last-minute. You know, because I listened to the show, you mentioned something in passing about who gets the dining room table, something like that, but my mind flashed to a movie. Mel Brooks' movie in 1970 called The 12 Chairs. Do you know it?
No.
Okay. Anyway, it's revealed in the movie early on. Someone died. This is a little of the after the French or the Russian Revolution. The family jewels are hidden inside the upholstery of one of the 12 chairs. So it's a madcap kind of comedy, but they're all trying to find the 12 chairs. They're somewhere in Russia. They got to trace down what happened to this chair, what happened to that chair. It's a funny comedy, but don't take it lightly is what I'm saying. There may be jewels, things, important things in the upholstery. I mean, this is a serious topic, I suppose, like you were talking about, like going through these details of like going through the cushions, going through details. Don't just say, I don't want those chairs. You know, you may regret that.
Bring your box cutter.
Yeah, really?
Well, if you want to see a movie about the household stuff, there's also Zorba the Greek. Do you know that one, Peter?
Oh, God, I missed seeing it. It was years ago.
Oh, yeah. The
Anthony Quinn.
Yeah, that's right. The decedent's, she's on her deathbed, and they've already cleaned her room out from all the stuff as she was dying. They already took all the stuff. It's very sad. But there are many great estate planning movies I could recommend. You seem to be a movie guy, so I'll tell you, there's Cat on the Hot Tin Roof about greed. There's Body
Heat. Oh, I'm in Florida. Did you just say Body Heat?
Body Heat, about the forged will being invalid.
Oh, yeah, intestate. I didn't know what that meant. I looked up afterward, but was that accurate? Did you find that movie kind of accurate in terms of Florida law and how, whatever, the shenanigans that the actress is pulling off? Is that plausible? That could be done?
Let me jump in and answer that for my guest. We were all practicing in California, so... John, unless you feel comfortable talking about Florida law, feel free to tell him you don't practice there.
Yeah, I don't know about Florida law, but there are forged wills we see, and we have a handwriting expert to help us with sort that out, Peter.
Peter, I love having you call at the last minute, but unfortunately that means I got to cut you off. We're basically out of time.
Okay.
All righty. Thanks for joining us. I look forward to chatting with you next week. And, John, I promised I would give you 2 to 3 minutes at the end for any last-minute remarks that you wish.
Well, thank you, Jeff. So my final words are that there's no time like right now. And you're not in the game until you have an appointment with an estate lawyer. And choose a lawyer who only does wills and trusts. You don't want to go to the bankruptcy lawyer for a trust. And you could, many ways to find a lawyer. One is ask people you know and trust who have had their own trust done. Talk to them about what the process was and what their experience with their lawyer was. And you can get a lot of information from the lawyer's website. Make sure they're really, that estate planning and trust is their, really their only work.
In general, the day when your lawyer knows a little bit about everything is long past. And if you go to that lawyer that does a little bit of everything, you can expect that maybe just a little bit of quality when you need a lot.
We call it door law. And I practiced door law when I first started. That's like whatever walks in the door, I'll take it. Yeah, I do that. Yeah. So get to somebody who's really deep into it with experience. And someone you have good chemistry with. Because, you, like I said, you want a long-term relationship. It's not, you don't want just a trust or a document or a product.
When you choose a lawyer, one of the most important things is that you can see eye to eye and work together. You could have the best lawyer around. They're not a good fit, necessarily, in your case. Find the one you can work with. You've been listening to Your Legal Rights on KALW 91.7 FM, San Francisco Bay Area. Tonight, we've been discussing probate, estate, long-term planning. Our guest tonight has been San Francisco attorney John O'Grady. Next week, we feature the return of our landlord-tenant program. Be sure to join Your Legal Rights again next week, Wednesday at 6 p.m., where, as always, we will take your calls and answer your questions. A big thanks to tonight's guest, San Francisco attorney John O'Grady. And on behalf of Your Legal Rights, thanks to you for listening. And for tonight's co-host, David Bigelizen, and at the controls, Marla Davies, I'm Jeff Hayden. Good night, be safe, and zealously guard your legal rights.
This is Shireen Adel, a news editor here at KALW. In case you missed it, healthcare costs are expected to go up for people enrolled in Covered California. The state is suing the Trump administration over Medicaid reimbursements for Planned Parenthood, and a bipartisan bill in Congress aims to address concerns around groundwater levels. You can hear those stories and more from our partners at NPR and the BBC on KALW.org or 91.7 FM, San Francisco.